Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is Vayigash. It means, "and he drew near." The Torah portion is Genesis 44, verse 18 to Genesis 47, 27. The Haftarah is Ezekiel chapter 37, verses 15 to 28. And the Brit Hadashah is Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. Before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu melech haolam. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe. We thank you for everything. We thank you for your Torah portions, for creation, for the Sabbath, for the feasts, for all of the things that you have created for us. We thank you that you have sent us Yeshua, our Messiah. And I ask that you would bless your people on this day, all over the earth, who are keeping the Shabbat, in Yeshua's name. Amen. We have been going through a series of Torah portions regarding Joseph. And this week I want to take a closer look at some things having to do with Joseph, in particular his dreams and those cups. Joseph is often derided for speaking his dreams. I recently have been looking at some commentaries that people have written about Joseph speaking his dreams, as if speaking his dreams made him into some kind of a brat. Well, like I have defended Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, I am going to defend Joseph. Joseph's dreams represent the prophecies that were spoken about Yeshua. You see, Joseph had dreams, and those dreams represented Yeshua. But to Joseph, those dreams represented prophecies that were not yet written or spoken. And in both instances, Joseph's dreams and the prophecies that would later be written about Yeshua were about Yeshua. If the prophecies that came later had not been spoken, no one would know whether or not Yeshua lived up to the standard set by the prophets for a Messiah. You know, they had a certain definition of what the Messiah would do, who he was, where he would come from, and so forth. Well, it's the same with Joseph's dreams. If those dreams had not come forth as prophecies, there would not have been a standard for the Messiah, because those dreams speak of the Messiah. But not only did those dreams speak of the Messiah, but they spoke of Joseph's own life, of things that must come to pass so that Joseph's own life could be a prophecy and a symbol of the things that would happen to Messiah. So it was important that Joseph speak those dreams. The books of Genesis and Jasher make Joseph out to be some kind of a kid, an arrogant child, a brat. In order to further understand about Joseph's dreams, we need to maybe get a different perspective of that. In our Western mindset, sometimes people who speak of their dreams appear to be egocentric. And often when someone is going to speak of his or her dream, why, they will say, "Please don't think I'm being egocentric, but I have this urgent need to tell you this dream." Well, in the ancient Near East context, in that ancient culture, dreams were considered very important. all over the Near East and the Far East, people believed that dreams were important. They spoke of the character of the individual. Sometimes they were prophetic. Sometimes they were just housekeeping dreams, you know. But your family really wanted to hear your dreams. And so ancient people shared their dreams openly. And in fact, sometimes parents would ask their children and even encourage them to share the dreams that they had. So just like in some other matters of doctrinal difficulties and cultural differences, we don't understand things from the ancient Near East context, I think that it's possible that we don't understand dreams from the ancient Near East context. And as I said, the books of Genesis and Jasher seem to indicate that Joseph speaking about his dreams was kind of out of order and was unwanted by the other family members. But again, I think that's our cultural and doctrinal filter on this matter. Let's take a different look at this. Let's think of, instead of Joseph magnifying himself above his brothers, as it says in the book of Jasher, and that perhaps he was arrogant, as he's been accused of for the last 4,000 years, maybe it is that he was just a normal human being, and the Lord let this be known. Because as a man, Joseph could not be perfect in the same way the Messiah was perfect. And remember that he symbolizes the Messiah. But looking at this from Yeshua's point of view, he also knew that he was chosen above all his brothers. Yet we don't call Yeshua arrogant, so was Joseph really arrogant? Or are these translations in Genesis and Jasher biased against Joseph because of our cultural misunderstanding and our false doctrinal training? We need to be careful about the emphasis that we place on Joseph's human frailties, because these Torah portions are more important than we give them credit for, and we need to see Joseph's entire life as prophecy and not merely a character overview. Now, we don't hear of the brothers having dreams, so if they did, their dreams were of no importance. And in fact, we only get two of Joseph's dreams, but apparently he was a dreamer. If a person is a dreamer, they have more dreams than just two in their life. We don't call a person that has only had two dreams that they can remember in their entire life a dreamer. But Joseph is known as a dreamer because of these two dreams. But also, a dreamer is a person that dreams a lot. However, only two of Joseph's dreams were considered very important, and none of the other brothers' dreams were important. Well, important in what way? They were not important in the way that they affected prophecy. These two dreams, and only two of Joseph's probably very many numerous dreams in his life, were prophetically important, you see. So we need to understand from the, if we can put ourselves back in that family and back in their shoes and imagine ourselves living their life, we can imagine that the brothers had dreams and Joseph had dreams, and that they spoke about them as was the custom in the ancient Near East and Far East. But that only two of Joseph's dreams were considered important, and they're important enough to rub the brothers the wrong way. The other thing that we need to recognize about Joseph's two dreams is that the themes are exactly alike. the symbolism in the dreams are different. In one dream, you have sheaves of wheat. In the other dreams, you have, in the other dream, you have heavenly bodies, stars, sun, moon. But in both dreams, the theme is that some are bowing down to the one. You see? So, the first time that Joseph has this dream, it irritates the brothers. The second time that Joseph dreams this way, it irritates Jacob, but he stores it away in his memory for contemplation. Remembering that Jacob had fought with a man that actually turned out to be God, he might have been given pause by these dreams of Joseph's. He might have actually had time to think about this and put two and two together and realized the prophetic significance of these two dreams. But the brothers, having had either no dreams or none of any significance, that's because contrary to popular belief, true prophetic dreams are very rare. They probably became jealous, but that was no fault of Joseph's and no reason for us to agree with the brothers' jealousy toward Joseph, in which they called him egotistical and arrogant. But then you add to these dreams that Joseph was Jacob's favorite, and now you have a recipe for huge jealousy, you see? Each set of brothers would have been jealous of all the other sets anyway. You know, the children of Leah might have been jealous of the children of Zilpah, and the children of Bilhah might have been jealous of the children of Rachel, and you know, they might have all been jealous of each other because of who their mothers were, you see. And of course, just like the two wives, Leah and Rachel, vied for Jacob's love and attention, we can assume that the brothers were also vying for his attention. And of course, that sets up another reason for jealousy. So I think it's important for us to not jump to the conclusion that Joseph was a brat, that he was somehow being contentious with his brothers or an instigator of problem with his brothers. There's a whole family dynamic and a cultural context that we don't really fully understand. And so until we do understand it, I think it's important for us to defend our patriarchs. Now, I want to say some words about dreams. We get the principle about prophetic dreams that I'm going to share with you here from the Joseph Torah portions. Prophetic dreams always come in twos, because that is how a matter is established. You get two dreams because you need two witnesses. And notice that Joseph did not interpret his dreams, but his father and his brothers did seem to understand what those dreams were. But again, we don't interpret our own dreams. Now, often, we can get insights into our dreams when they are about ourselves personally. And, of course, the Lord gives us clues about our behavior or something He wants us to know about ourselves in our dreams. And so we can get insights into our dreams, but Prophetic dreams are what I'm talking about here. We don't interpret our own prophetic dreams. Prophetic dreams are established in the same person with two dreams. And that same person with the two dreams does not interpret his own prophetic dreams. You get someone from outside to establish and to interpret those prophetic dreams. This is why I don't pay attention when people say that they've had a prophetic dream. Many people right now are dreaming about the destruction of America. But are these dreams prophetic? Well, no and yes. No, they're not prophetic unless the same person dreams the same theme. Like Joseph dreamed the same theme, but with different symbols. And yes, these people's dreams are, generally speaking, prophetic because so many other people have dreams that are similar. So the person having the dreams cannot say they're prophetic dreams, but if you get many people dreaming the dreams of destruction like is going on now, you begin to understand that there may be a prophetic warning being issued. But remember, it's the two dreams in the same person that establish it as a fact that cannot be changed. We got this from Joseph's own words when he was talking to the cupbearer and to the baker, because the dreams are established by God, you see. Now, it was in that account that the cupbearer had one prophetic dream and the baker had one prophetic dream. But Joseph interpreted the dreams specifically for each individual. And because there were two dreams there, we also have this rule about two dreams. Now, it's possible that someone who is prophetic, like Joseph, could come along and interpret one person's dream and say that this person's dream is prophetic, but then we would have to wait to see if it really happens. Because unless there are two dreams, it's not established. Unless there are two witnesses, it is not established. It can only be established when there is one dream after the fact, after the occurrence has happened that was prophesied in that dream. I hope that I've been making sense. But there is the indication that the Lord uses dreams to warn individuals when it is time for them to act. And we see this particular dream pattern in the dream that God gave Joseph about Mary and Yeshua in Matthew chapter 1, starting at verse 20. But while he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, you son of David, fear not to take you, Mary, your wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Ghost. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed to their own country another way. And when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appears to Joseph in a dream, saying, Arise, and take the young child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and be there until I bring you word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. Now, in this incident, in this dream, it was only one dream. So it only applied to the one person in one situation. You see how this Joseph's dream was different than the other Joseph's dream, which applied prophetically to the entire house of Jacob. You see, so the one dream that Joseph had of Mary and Yeshua, yes, that was prophetic, but it was for him only. The two dreams that Joseph had regarding the house of Jacob were there to establish a prophecy about the Messiah. So that's why there had to be two dreams for the first Joseph and only one dream needed for the second Joseph, because it applied to him personally. And so when we have one dream dreamers who believe that their dreams are prophetic, they can be prophetic when we see that they are also in a group of other one dream dreamers that are dreaming the same thing, but most likely it's not about the whole house of Israel. It would be very rare for that to happen, because as we're going to see with Pharaoh's dream, in order for it to pertain to everyone, there still had to be two dreams. So when we have the one dream dreamers get together in a group of one dream dreamers and they're all dreaming of destruction, well, we can take that as a warning, but it's not written in stone. But one dream dreamers are exhorted to look for this as a warning and a situation to them personally, the way that it was with Joseph regarding Mary and Yeshua. I hope that's making sense, because, you know, dreaming is something that people are very interested in, and we need to really understand how these dreams apply. So the rule is one dream, one person. Two dreams means it is for the people and it is prophetic. That's the general rule, and I hope I haven't been so wordy that I, you know, kind of confused you there. So now, immediately after Joseph's dreams, those prophetic dreams, Jacob sends Joseph to his brothers who were tending the flock. Now, soon after the last of the prophets speak about a coming Messiah, the father sends Yeshua to his brothers who are tending the flock. You see the comparison there? In the time when Yeshua came, the sheep were divided into various flocks. The flocks of the house of Hillel. The house of Shammai had a flock. The Essenes had a flock. The Zealots had a flock. And so the brothers had divided the flock. And I believe that in Genesis we find that the flock is kind of divided as well, because you'll notice that Joseph went out to the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. But where were the flocks that were with Judah, for instance? Because Judah was from Leah. So there's a prophecy there about how the flocks are divided among the various sons. Now, both Joseph's and Yeshua's job is to report to the father what is happening with these flocks. And note that it was not Joseph's decision or intention to be a talebearer. Neither was that Yeshua's mission. They were both sent by their fathers, and they both went willingly in perfect obedience. You know, we don't read that Joseph complained about being sent. You know, he didn't say, "But Dad, they hate me, and my life will be in danger if you send me out there. And then, if they're being bad and I tell you about it, they're going to kill me." No, Joseph just went. And Joseph foretells Yeshua's attitude regarding obedience to his father. Now Joseph gets out there in the field, and sure enough, they're being disobedient. Now Genesis says that Joseph returned with a bad report. And this has inspired all kinds of slander against Joseph, just like the slander against Yeshua that still goes on today. The Midrash, however, fills in some of the details, telling us that Joseph found his brothers eating raw meat. Now, whether or not they actually were eating raw meat, this eating of raw meat symbolizes that they were disobeying the heart of the Torah. You know, the heart of the Torah has, as part of it, a commandment to not eat blood. Well, when Yeshua comes, he finds his brothers violating the very heart of Torah with their false doctrines and man-made practices that they put over the weightier matters. This is why Yeshua comes teaching the weightier matters of the Torah. He knows that they already know the written part of the Torah. They already have the letter. They need to get the spirit. They have the letter of the Torah just fine. They know what that is. But he comes teaching them the weightier matters because they're violating the very heart of the Torah. Symbolically, the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the house of Hillel and Shammai and all of the Essenes and the Zealots and all these people, they're eating the raw meat like what Joseph found his brothers eating, you see? And so they throw Joseph into the pit. And later on, they throw Yeshua into the grave. But guess what? Joseph comes out via the Ishmaelites, symbolizing the Romans. He comes out of the grave in resurrection, but, you know, the Romans are still there, right? And then Yeshua comes out via the Romans as well, under Christianity. So you see how the symbolism is the same with Joseph coming out of the pit and Yeshua coming out of the grave. But another thing that we need to notice about Joseph is that he did not complain about being in prison after having been thrown out of Potiphar's house. Why is this important? Because it goes to his character. Joseph had such good character that Potiphar put him in charge of his house. Yet, he is said to have had really bad character before that. Well, either he's got good character or he has bad character. And, you know, sometimes I know that difficulties like Joseph goes through can change a person's character somewhat, but there's not going to be necessarily a radical change in character, which leads me to believe that Joseph was a good character before he went down to Egypt and was put in charge of the father's house, of Potiphar's house, rather. You know, in prison, after he got thrown out of Potiphar's house, Joseph just kept working and doing good. And notice that Yeshua did not complain when he was crucified and when he was put in the grave. He did not complain then, and he is not complaining now. Yeshua just keeps on doing what he does, being our advocate and intercessor, like Joseph was to the cupbearer and the baker when they were in prison. We are in prison, and guess where Yeshua is? Right here in prison with us. What do I mean when I say we are in prison? Prison is a metaphor for exile. And where we are, Yeshua is. So guess what? Yeshua is not complaining about being in prison with us or being in exile with us. No, he is just continuing to work on our behalf and doing good for us. And that's Joseph's testimony in prison. So if he was that good in prison, then we have misunderstood his behavior prior to going into prison. Now, that's my opinion, and I'm going to stick to it until I see something else. Now let's talk about the cup. The cup is one piece that symbolizes Yeshua in the account of Joseph. And it is a thread that begins to run through the story, starting with his being in prison in Egypt. Now, there's a dream that was had by Pharaoh's cupbearer, and I want to read it to you because there are some significant things in here to understand. Genesis chapter 40, verse 9. And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream, behold, a vine," that's Yeshua, "was before me. And in the vine were three branches," that's 3 days that Yeshua was in the grave. "And it was as though it budded, and her blossoms shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes, mature citizens of the kingdom. And Pharaoh's," that's the father's, "cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes," mature believers, "and pressed them into Pharaoh's," the father's, "cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's," the father's, "hand." Now, I want to point out to you that you and I, we are Yeshua's wine. Remember at the wedding feast that he saved the best wine for last? He saves the best for the end of days when they will be pressed by him. It is his will that his people be pressed, because from them comes the best wine at the end of days. And their wedding feast with him will be the highlight of all creation when it happens. Now, Joseph's interpretation, you just got my interpretation, Joseph's interpretation, and I'm going to put a little of mine in here too, starts in Genesis 40, verse 13. "Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up your head." You see, Yeshua was in the grave for 3 days. The cupbearer had 3 days to go before Pharaoh lifted up his head, or, you know, brought him back and restored him to his place. And it says, "And you shall deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand." Yeshua will deliver the father's cup full of pressed wine into the father's hand. So Yeshua is the cupbearer. His head was lifted up. He was resurrected. That's what it's symbolizing here, his head being lifted up. He was resurrected. And a head being lifted up also in the ancient Near East context means that your shame is lifted from you. You see, you hang your head in shame. When your head is lifted up, you are not in shame anymore, see? And so Yeshua is restored. He is lifted back up to his father's side. Why did he have to be restored or have his head lifted up? Because he took our shame on him. We had shame, and he took our shame on himself. And then the father lifted up his head and restored him, you see. And this is why through him we don't have to be ashamed anymore, you see. And so he still is acting on our behalf as the father's servant. That's what he's still doing for us. Now, I want to go to another place where it talks about this cup. And this cup is with Benjamin. It's in Genesis 44, starting at verse 1. "And he commanded," that's Joseph, "Joseph commanded the steward of his house, saying, 'Fill the men's sack with food, as much as they can carry, and put every man's money in his sack's mouth and put my cup, the silver cup, in the sack's mouth of the youngest and his corn money. And he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. And then we drop down to verse 12. And he searched. That's Joseph. Joseph is now searching, and he began at the eldest and left at the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Well, who is the youngest today, here at the end of days? Who does Benjamin symbolize at the end of days? Well, I believe it is the Hebrew roots or messianic movement. This return to the Torah, spoken of in Jeremiah chapter 6, Hosea 5 and 6, and elsewhere, I believe prophesies about the end of days, and it represents Joseph being revealed. Jeremiah chapter 6, starting at verse 16, says, "This is what the Lord says, stand beside the roads and watch, and ask for the ancient paths, where the good way is. Walk in it and find rest for yourselves." But they said, "We won't walk in it." I appointed watchmen over you, listen for the sound of the trumpet. But they said, "We won't listen." Therefore, hear, nations, and know, congregation, what will happen to them. Listen, earth, I am about to bring calamity on this people, on the fruit of their plans, because they didn't listen to my words and they rejected my instruction. What instruction? The Torah. Now, I'm going to connect this to why Benjamin is related to this passage in just a minute, but let's go to Hosea chapter 5, verse 15. He says, "I will leave and go back to my place until they admit their offense and seek my face. When affliction comes to them, they will eagerly seek me. Come, let us return to the Lord. Even though he has torn us, he will heal us. Even though he has wounded us, he will bind our wounds. After 2 days, he will restore us to life. On the third day, he will raise us up." Does that ring any bell right there with the 3 days? "And we will live in his presence. Let us know, let us pursue knowledge of the Lord. His coming is as certain as the dawn. He will come to us like the rain, like the autumn and spring rains come on the earth." Now, that was from the International Standard Version, but the King James says the latter and former rain. You see, there are former days. Those are past. We live in the latter days. And I believe Benjamin symbolizes the youngest movement of Jacobites on the earth, who have been with Jacob in his tents learning Torah while the other brothers are off doing whatever it is they do. So, you see, because they are saying, "We will not listen," he says, "I'm about to bring calamity on to the earth because they rejected my instruction." Yet there are some who did not reject instruction. And in Joseph's time, it was Benjamin who was getting the instruction from Jacob. Now, notice that Pharaoh's, or the father's cup, is now with Benjamin. You see? So this ties Benjamin in with the end times, the latter days, and the instructions, the Torah, and the cup now. And in this case, Benjamin is with the cup, it also symbolizes Yeshua. So this cup has much prophetic significance. It's prophetic of Joseph and Benjamin and Yeshua, that have to do with the Messiah. So we are like Benjamin from the time of the disciples, because there's a cup that has to do with Yeshua and his disciples. So we are like Benjamin, who has been from the time of the disciples. And I'm going to share a little more with that about that with you. Matthew chapter 20, verse 22. But Yeshua answered and said, "You know not what you ask. Are you able to drink of the cup that I shall drink of, and to be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" And they said to him, "We are able." Let's take a minute and talk about not the cup, but the baptism that he is going to be baptized with. And they said that we're able to be baptized with that baptism. What is that baptism? That particular baptism is death and resurrection. All baptism represents death and resurrection. You go into the water where you're supposed to die, and when you come out, you're alive, and you know what that means? You're innocent. But you have to drink of the cup, see, in order to get that baptism. And he said to them, "You shall drink indeed of my cup, and you shall be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with." Then he goes on to say that to sit on my right hand or my left is not mine to give, because the context of this is the you know, who's going to get to sit on his right hand and on his left. But he uses this opportunity to talk about the cup and the baptism, and to put the cup and the baptism together. See, we drink of the cup, and in fact, what it is that we get pressed and become juice, a wine, in the cup, and then we are baptized with death and resurrection. And when we come out resurrected, we are no longer guilty of anything. We're innocent. So now, those who know Yeshua is the Messiah and who keep his commandments are Benjamin. There has been a Benjamin on the earth since Yeshua's time, but he has been hidden by the Father, just as Benjamin was hidden with Jacob. You know, he was not presented to the world until he went to meet with Joseph, right? But now, in the time of the latter reign, Benjamin is being presented to the world just as he was presented to Joseph 4,000 years ago. Now, Joseph's cup that he gave to Benjamin also symbolizes the cup that Yeshua cannot drink from because it is still in Benjamin's sack. Luke 22:15. And he said to them, "With desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I say to you, I will not any more eat thereof until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God." What is the fulfillment? Well, it's the end of the time of trouble, when the grapes get pressed into the cup. And you can see this explanation in Yeshua's own words in the next two verses, Luke 22:17. "And he took the cup and gave thanks and said, 'Take this and divide it among yourselves.'" In other words, get ready to be pressed. For I say to you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God shall come." But first, Benjamin has to be presented to the world. Joseph in Egypt and the saints have to be pressed until their flesh is crushed to death, and all that is left is the pure juice of the Ruach HaKodesh. In this, we can see that Joseph's life and Yeshua's life shows us that it is the most dire circumstances of our lives that the Lord can make the most use of. Our dreams and hopes are tied to the cup, to our pressing and subsequent redemption, to our baptism, when we come out resurrected and no longer guilty, and we can take our rightful place in the kingdom when the kingdom has come, you see? May we accept these dreams, these prophecies, and this cup with grace. Shabbat Shalom.